I went to Mara's Tarot place because I couldn't handle the breakup. I wasn't looking for magic or answers, just something to keep me from falling apart. She didn't act mysterious. She sat me down, looked at my face for a second, and said I was collapsing inside. I hated that she was right. She spread the cards fast, barely glancing at them before saying danger was coming. No build-up, no dramatic tone, just that. I left feeling worse than when I arrived, but the idea stuck in my head. I kept going back because I was lonely enough to cling to anything. Instead of calming me, she pushed the fear deeper each time. She said I shouldn't ignore signs, that something was getting closer. The more she talked, the more I started believing her. Days later, I was already losing sleep. Her voice kept looping in my head like an infection that spread through everything I did. I didn't know it then, but that was the first step toward the mess that followed. I started shutting myself inside my house. I covered windows with plastic sheets, blocked cracks with tape, and kept the lights off after dark. I barely ate and only left for groceries. My phone filled with messages I didn't check. Mara didn't stop. She said something tied to me would get dragged into my fate. She said danger was already moving around my home. She told me to trust my instincts at night and not hesitate if I heard footsteps. I left shaking. For days, I walked around the house like I was being haunted, checking the hallway every hour. I wasn't thinking logical anymore. Her voice had replaced every rational thought I used to have. I didn't realize how far gone I was until the night everything broke. That night, I sat on the floor with the lights off, trying to breathe quietly. The house was so silent that every tiny noise felt amplified. My hands wouldn't stay still. My heartbeat felt irregular, like my body couldn't decide what rhythm to follow. Tension kept building inside me, rising without a break. I kept checking the hallway, then the kitchen, then the door, then the windows. I moved from spot to spot without any direction. I felt like I was waiting for something to grab me without warning. Then I heard it. A creak in the hallway. Slow. Not the house settling. Something heavier. Someone walking inside my home. I froze, breathing through my mouth, listening for the next step. It came. Another creak, closer than before. I crawled toward the drawer and grabbed the gun I had bought months earlier. My hands shook so badly, the metal kept slipping against my fingers. I held it anyway, pointing toward the hallway. My throat tightened with each second that passed. The shape appeared at the edge of the living room. A person moving slowly as if trying not to make noise. I didn't speak. I didn't move. The silhouette kept coming toward me. My chest felt like it was about to collapse. Mara's warnings circled in my head like commands. I lifted the gun higher. My finger hovered over the trigger. The figure took one more step. I fired. The shape dropped instantly, hitting the floor hard. My ears rang. I stayed in place, unable to breathe properly. I reached for the lamp, switched it on, and the light fell over the body. It was Jane. My ex. She was lying on my floor, eyes half open, terrified even in death. My stomach dropped. I felt sick. I knelt beside her, barely able to understand what I was looking at. She still had her jacket on, keys in her pocket. Her phone lay next to her, screen cracked from the fall. I grabbed her phone and unlocked it with shaking hands. Message after message filled the screen. She had been begging me to answer. She said she was worried. She said she was coming to check if I was alive. My chest tightened so much I almost keeled over. I checked my own phone. Dozens of missed calls. Family, friends, Jane, over and over again. They all thought something horrible had happened to me. They cared. I ignored all of them. I sat beside her body, hands over my face, breathing fast. Everything inside me felt like it was twisting and tearing apart. I didn't know if I was crying or choking or both. I just stared at her, repeating her name under my breath. The tension kept rising until I felt like I had to do something or I would lose my mind. The only clear thought left in me was Mara. She pushed every fear. She fed every panic. She made me believe an intruder was coming. I got up, grabbed my coat, and left the house with the gun still in my pocket. Mara's door was cracked open when I reached her place. The hallway smelled like old incense. My breath came out shaky. I pushed the door fully open and stepped inside. She was sitting at her small table stuffing cards like she'd been expecting me. Her smile wasn't comforting. It was mocking. I felt a chill spread through my spine, but couldn't back out anymore. Before I spoke, she started talking casually. She said people like me always fail for the same traps. She said she didn't believe in Tarot at all. She did it because ruining lives gave her something to do. She said the Tarot had destroyed her once, so she made a hobby out of getting revenge on others. The tension snapped so violently inside me that everything blurred. I grabbed her by the throat and pushed her against the wall. She didn't scream or fight. She laughed. A sharp, breathless sound that made my hands shake harder. Her face turned red, then darker, but she kept laughing straight into my eyes. I squeezed tighter. Her knees buckled. Her laughter broke into choking, but didn't stop. Even as her body weakened, the expression on her face stayed the same. Like she found the whole situation funny. Like she had been waiting for this ending. When her body went limp, I let go. She fell to the floor like a dropped doll. Her eyes stayed open, the same twisted amusement frozen on her face. My breath was uneven and fast. I stepped back, trying to steady myself, but nothing felt real anymore. I left the apartment without closing the door, stumbling down the street with my heartbeat going wild. My mind kept replaying Jane on the floor, the messages, the way she had come to help me. I didn't go home. I didn't go anywhere specific. I just kept walking until I couldn't take another step. They found me wandering at sunrise, still carrying the gun. I didn't resist when the police stopped me. I didn't try to explain anything. I couldn't form a sentence that made sense. In the interrogation room, I barely spoke. Every time they asked what happened, all I could picture was Jane's face when the light hit her. I kept shaking, unable to sit still for long. They realized fast that I wasn't stable enough to keep there. The doctors asked questions I didn't answer. They said I was disconnected from reality, that I needed to be monitored. They said this wasn't a place for punishment, but for treatment. I nodded, even though none of it felt real. They transferred me to a psychiatric ward the same night, and I didn't fight it. Now I'm in a room with padded walls and a bed bolted to the floor. The lights never turn off completely. The world feels distant, like I'm watching everything through water. Sometimes late at night I hear laughter coming from the far corner of the room. It's quiet, but sharp enough to cut through everything. I know it isn't real, but that doesn't stop it from shaking me. I think about Jane every day. About the messages I didn't read. About the fear I let consume me. The doctors ask me to write what I remember, but I can barely hold a pen without my hand trembling. I don't ask to be released. I don't trust myself anymore. I just sit there waiting for the laughter to stop, even though deep down I know it won't. I went to the Tarot session because I felt stuck with my life. Nothing dramatic. Just a steady discomfort I couldn't shake. The room behind the shop was small, and the woman barely looked at me before laying out the cards. She didn't try to build suspense or act mystical. She spoke like she was telling me about the weather. She said someone new was coming, someone who would change everything. She said, I need to be ready, like it wasn't optional. I left without knowing how to take it. For the rest of the week, her words stayed in my head, even though I didn't believe in that stuff. After a few days, the feeling became annoying. I tried to go on with my routine, but every time I entered a cafe, walked down the street, or checked my phone, I felt like I was supposed to be waiting for something. A sense of pressure built up, not urgent, just steady and irritating. On the seventh day, I decided to forget about it and went for coffee. I sat down trying to relax for once. That was when a man approached my table. He said his name was Ian. He asked to sit because the place was crowded, and I let him. At first he acted normal. Casual questions, light conversation, nothing strange. But he watched me too closely, like every detail mattered. I tried to ignore it. The tarot reading popped into my mind, pushing me to keep talking. The longer we spoke, the more obvious his focus on me became. He leaned forward every time I answered something, like he needed to store it permanently. When he asked me out, I hesitated. Without the tarot reading, I probably would have said no, but the pressure of the prediction made me accept. He smiled in a way that didn't match the situation. Something in my stomach tightened, but I ignored it. The day of the date arrived, and the tension built inside me before I even left my apartment. Not a panic, just a heavy discomfort that made everything slower. But I pushed myself out the door anyway. At the restaurant, Ian greeted me like we had known each other for years. He talked endlessly, barely letting me speak. The whole time his eyes stayed on my face, almost unblinking. The discomfort in my chest grew steadily, a pressure that made it hard to sit still. Before the food arrived, he said we should leave. I told him I preferred staying. His smile vanished for a second, replaced with a controlled irritation that he forced back almost instantly. He pushed again, and this time his tone was firm, expecting me to follow. By the time we finished dinner, I knew I didn't want to go anywhere with him. But when we stepped outside, he walked close to me. Too close, guiding my steps without touching me. My breathing tightened. I told him again that I was going home. He didn't react to my words at all. The tension spiked when he gestured me toward his car with an expression that wasn't a smile anymore. It was something colder, practiced. My body tensed even before his hands touched me. When I hesitated, he grabbed my wrist. His grip wasn't violent. It was controlled, precise, like he was used to handling people. I tried to pull away, but he held me firmly and told me not to make things complicated. My pulse jumped. He pushed me into the car before I could shout or reach for anyone. My head hit the seat. The door slammed, and the locks clicked. The sound made my stomach twist. I tried the handle, even though I knew it was useless. He drove in silence, calm, focused, confident. That terrified me more than anything. Someone who panics might make a mistake. Someone who stays calm has done it before. When we arrived at his house, he dragged me inside without rushing, like he had all the time in the world. He locked the door, turned toward me, and said the words that froze me in place. "I'm not letting you leave." The room he kept me in was ready long before he met me. Metal bolts, a thin mattress, chains, hooks. He didn't hesitate to explain everything. He talked casually about the women he used to bring home and kill. He said he planned to kill me too, but once he saw me up close, he wanted something different. The tension became part of my daily life. It built every time I heard his footsteps, every time he opened the door, every time he sat in front of me and talked for hours about things I didn't want to hear. He forced routines on me, eating schedules, sleeping hours, talks, punishments. When he hurt me physically, he didn't shout or enjoy dramatic reactions. He watched me with quiet focus, as if studying how much I could take. Sometimes he left me in the dark for days. Sometimes he dragged me out to clean or cook. Sometimes he said nothing at all, which was worse because I didn't know what was coming next. Months passed, then years. The world outside faded. My mind shrank into the small space that he allowed me to have. The tension never stopped. It just changed shape. At some point, his presence became the only stable thing left. The silence when he was gone felt heavier than the pain when he was there. One night, he admitted he almost killed me on the first date. He said keeping me alive was more interesting. He said he liked how I behaved. He said I belonged in the house. I didn't argue. I didn't have anything left inside of me strong enough to argue. He kept killing other women. He didn't hide that. Sometimes he made me listen. Sometimes he made me clean. He never got tired of watching people fail to escape. He told me I never failed the way they did. The police came after almost 4 years. The crash of the door shook the whole house. I didn't know if it was real. For a moment, I thought Ian planned it as some kind of test. The panic rose so fast, I couldn't breathe. When officers burst into the room, the lights felt too bright. They pulled me out, wrapped me in a blanket, and told me everything was going to be all right. I was safe now. They dragged me through the hallway. Every corner of the house felt unfamiliar, like I had forgotten how doors were supposed to look. When they opened the front door, I froze. Ian was on the ground outside, pinned by two officers. He wasn't fighting. He wasn't scared. He just stared at me with the same calm expression he always had. My body leaned forward without meaning to. An officer blocked me, telling me to keep moving, but I couldn't take my eyes off Ian. When they lifted him up and pushed him into the car, the pressure in my chest became almost painful. At the hospital, a doctor tried to explain why I kept asking where Ian was. I barely answered him, but he kept talking. He mentioned how long-term captivity affects the brain. He said my reactions were common. He finally used a term that made everything go quiet for a moment. He said it was Stockholm Syndrome. I didn't say anything. The word didn't make the tension go away. It only made me feel even more pulled into two different directions. They released me after a few weeks. Everyone talked about recovery and rebuilding, but none of it felt real. The outside world was too open, too unpredictable. Nights were the worst. The silence didn't sound right. It wasn't the silence I was used to. I read about Ian's trial. They listed everything he did to the others. Names, dates, evidence. It didn't push him away from my mind. It only made the pressure in my chest return stronger, like something unfinished. After a few days, I asked when I could visit him. The staff acted uncomfortable, but I insisted. I didn't bother explaining. I didn't know how to explain it. When I finally sat in front of him behind the glass, he smiled like nothing had changed. My chest tightened instantly. The room felt strangely familiar, predictable, safe in a way that terrified me, and I sort of liked that. And to think that all started that day. I hated her for all I went through, but the tarot woman was right about everything. I should be thankful.
I work alone in a small house on the edge of town. People come to see me to calm their nerves or to feel like they understand their lives. I never pretend to have answers. I just read the cards and tell them what the symbols mean in the most normal way possible. Most clients come once a month, sometimes less. Nothing too intense. Nothing that prepared me for him. I met him on a Tuesday that looked like any other. He introduced himself as Nolan. He was the kind of guy who avoided eye contact but still watched everything. He sat across the table and kept tapping the edge with one finger. I did the reading. Everything felt neutral, and he left looking more relaxed than when he arrived. I didn't think too much about it. The next week he showed up again, then again and again. Every session he asked about his future, his job, his relationships, and things he didn't even know how to name. I explained that the cards don't control anything. I told him they just show possibilities, not orders. He nodded, but the way he looked at the cards made me uneasy. One night he arrived late. He looked tired. He stared at the deck for too long before leaving. After that, he stopped coming. I assumed he got bored or realized tarot wasn't going to solve his problems. I didn't expect anything else from him. A week passed without hearing from him, then another. Things were peaceful, and I carried on with my routine. People came and went. I cleaned the table, the candles, the floor. I slept well. Nothing stood out. But every night I kept thinking about the way no one had stared at the cards the last time. Not with curiosity, with hunger. Like he expected them to finally give him the thing he was missing. That look stuck to me more than I'd like to admit. One evening I heard something outside. A step on the gravel. Slow. Heavy. I turned off the lights and checked through the front window, but the darkness outside didn't show anything. I tried to brush it off, thinking it was a neighbor walking their dog. But the sound came again. Closer. Then it stopped, right at my porch. I waited, trying to stay calm. I didn't want to open the door. I didn't want to move. The air felt stuck inside my chest, but I forced myself to stay still and listen, hoping whatever stood outside would go away. Then came the knock. A dragging, weak knock. Not polite, not normal. The kind that comes from someone barely holding themselves up. I approached the door slowly, knowing something was off, but needing to see. When I opened it, Nolan was standing there. His clothes were soaked in blood from his shoulders to his shoes. He was breathing uneven. His lips were cracked and trembling. He stepped inside without waiting for permission. Before I reacted, he collapsed on my chair across the tarot table. The blood on him was fresh. Some of it dripped onto the wooden floor. He wiped his face with the back of his hand and stared right at me like we'd just finished a normal conversation. I was trying to understand what I was looking at. There were cuts on his arms, bruises on his neck, and something under his nails I didn't want to identify. He leaned forward, holding the table like it was the only thing stopping him from falling again. I felt a deep pressure inside my chest as he talked faster and faster, explaining that he had finally done it. He said everything he accomplished was because of the visions I had given him. He repeated that every step he took matched the cards, that the cards were never wrong, that I had been right about everything. Before anything else happened, there was a moment where the room felt too quiet. No one stared at my deck like he wanted to tear it apart. His hands kept twitching. His jaw clenched hard enough to make a noise. I had the clear sense he wasn't going to let me walk away from this table. I knew the next thing he did would decide whether I made it out, alive. I tried to keep my voice steady while explaining, slowly, that tarot doesn't give direct orders. I told him I never told him to hurt anyone. I reminded him that readings are interpretive. I never pointed him toward any violent path. Nolan leaned back and let out a laugh that was too loud, too sudden, and completely out of place. He pointed at the cards like they were responsible for everything. He told me I didn't understand the power I had, that every card I revealed pushed him towards something he was supposed to do, that he had completed every task because the cards had demanded it. Hearing him twist simple readings into commands made my stomach clench. I reached toward the drawer under the table where I kept a small taser. I moved slowly, trying not to draw attention, but Nolan's eyes followed my hand before I even touched the handle. He stood up so fast the chair slid back and slammed into the wall. He grabbed my wrist and pinned my arm on the table. His grip sent a sharp pain up my elbow. Before he attacked again, there was a stretch of seconds where he stared at me like he was trying to catch a lie forming in my head. He breathed hard, and every breath sounded like he was swallowing fire. The silence between us felt rigged, like the next movement would break something important. I didn't move. Didn't blink. I waited for him to decide what I was worth. Nolan looked at the taser under the table and shook his head. Then his anger shifted into something messier, something desperate. He yanked me from the chair and pushed me onto the floor. My shoulder hit the edge hard, and a sharp sting spread down my arm. He grabbed my deck with shaking hands and threw the cards across the table before pulling a few at random. He stared at them as they were telling him something only he could hear. He started listing reasons why each card meant, "I deserve to die." I tried to crawl toward the back door, but he stepped on my leg and forced me still. He was sweating, breathing through his teeth, repeating that he had been used, that I had turned him into a weapon for fun, that I'm not a simple tarot reader, that I'm a witch. Before he made his final move, there was a brief pause where he stared at the oil lamp near the wall. His focus locked onto it in a way that scared me more than anything he had done so far. He whispered that he was sorry, that he didn't want me as an enemy. He said I wanted to ruin him, and the only way to stop witches are by burning them. He repeated it again with more force. He grabbed the lamp, pulled the cloth from the table, and wrapped it around me to keep me still. He dragged me toward the center of the room. He lit the lamp's wick and held it above me. The flame shook, dropping small sparks onto my clothes. I twisted my wrist hard enough to tear the skin, trying to loosen the knot. The cloth around my shoulders felt hot, and the air thickened with smoke. I managed to free one hand, just enough to grab the edge of the table and pull myself sideways. The lamp slipped from his hand when he tried to stop me. It shattered on the floor. Fire spread across the wood and climbed the wall. Nolan backed up, shouting things I couldn't understand. I pushed myself toward the open window and forced my body through the frame, even as the heat pressed against my back. I hit the ground outside and crawled until the grass scratched my palms. My house burned fast. Nolan screamed inside for a moment. Then, I didn't hear him anymore. The police questioned me for hours, but they had nothing to compare my story with. Nolan vanished. No records, no calls, no witnesses. The only evidence left was the burnt remains of my table and the melted bits of rope. Weeks later, a homicide was reported in another town. The description of the victim matched a story Nolan had rambled about during one of his sessions. I didn't touch a tarot deck again. I didn't try to replace it or rebuild the table. I left the burned house behind and moved into a small apartment where I keep the lights bright at night. People still send messages asking for readings. I ignore all of them.